Welcome to the Cloquet Vineyard. To find out more of who we are, go to cloquetvineyard.org. Thanks for listening and have a good and beautiful day.
Today, we're going to start a new series all about discovering your true self and where we most logically have to start, because where you experience your true self at the finest point of your life, I would say it's like the peak of existence, and that's seventh grade. So in junior high, right? Junior high, you desperately want to fit in, right? You just want to fit in. Junior higher might not say, I want to fit in, but they know exactly what they don't want. What don't you want to do? Stand out, right? And so like maybe you had like you couldn't get the hair up with the aqua net. You just couldn't get enough to get it like flip up there. Or maybe you couldn't, like me, I had curly hair and it would just like, probably even like right now, some of it's going this way, others going this way, some of it is gone. You know what my kids call it? They call it the V. Like, hey dad, how's the V going? I'm like, what are you talking about? Your hair, it's like a V. Which I laughed at because I thought that was pretty genius. So what am I talking about? Oh, junior high. So or it's like your dad like took your Jabot jeans and washed them. You're like, Dad, that's my only pair of Jabot jeans. And you start crying. You're like, you don't even know me. And the dad's like, what in the world is going on, right? Or you wake up and you have like a little zit and it turns into like the pepperoni zit. And you're like, I can't go to school. You're like, I have a job, right? You're going to school. And you flip, anyone been there before, right? You remember in junior high, right? Yeah, so the three of us apparently had really, everyone else like, no, junior high was amazing. So, but they don't want to stand out, because if you stand out, then people are gonna look at you, and if they look at you, they're gonna laugh at you. If you laugh at you, you are essentially dead, right? That's kind of what you feel. You'll do whatever you can to fit in. You'll do whatever you can. You'll look around the room and say, what are we laughing at today? And who are we laughing at today? And what shirt is... I still remember showing up junior high and I had my favorite sweatshirt. It was red with these black and white checkers and I loved it. But I remember the day where I remember that it came right down to like the edge of my pants, and that if I even just moved my arm a little bit, like my belly button would show. And I remember, that's a strong memory. I remember feeling like, oh no, this isn't cool anymore. And so I just wanted to sit all day and just like, Chris, we're going to go to gym. My leg's broken. I can't move. Because I just, for some reason, it's in your mind that I'm going to get like ripped apart. Like, and I've talked to some people who went to school here, and you are now a grown adult, and they'll walk in and still like think, is this shirt cool? Like smelling their breath. And you resort back to that, like when you're walking to school, like you want to fit in. And really, when we do that, that comes out of a place of really insecurity. Now, junior hires need to go through that. They need to storm through that, because they're going to find themselves and what makes them them, and it's going to be this really awkward process. You just can't. You have to go through that pain, right? It's a rite of passage, maybe. So, but it still comes out of a place of insecurity, of where I am not enough. If I stand out, then I am weak, and if I'm weak, I lose. And there's no way that we still do this as grown adults, right? There's no way that we just walk in, we're like confident everywhere. We go, no, I'm an important person. No, I have value and worth, right? Or maybe not. But it's so easy to do this, especially when it comes to spirituality. I remember being a teenager, and I came into life with Jesus, and I loved it. And I looked around the room and saw, okay, how do they worship? And how do they talk about the Bible? And people would take time, and I'm very thankful they'd take time to teach me, or the word we use in churches, to disciple me. And they'd say, like, hey, we don't watch these kind of videos. We don't laugh at these things. This is how you should probably think about politically. I remember people telling me these things. And when you're young, you're like, oh, okay, we're going to perform. That's essentially what it is. And some of those things that they taught me, I hold on to today, and I'm so thankful. I'm so thankful that my youth pastor, Phil, taught me about how you can actually see Jesus in the Bible and what it looks like to engage with the divine through worship. There's other things where I just did because other people do. I still remember being a part of this community where they started dancing. They got up and like were running around the building, which if you want to do that, like believe in your dreams, right? You can do hard things. But I remember watching them thinking, I'm a horrible, horrible follower of Jesus, because there's no way I'm dancing, right? If that means that is good, then I'm bad because I'm not hopping out running around doing the Holy Spirit conga line. Or it's just not my personality. But have you been there before? Where you look at other people and what they do and you're like, well, that must be right. And that means I must be wrong. And so I better go perform. I better go play. When I was learning how to be a pastor, I went to a Bible college in Minneapolis, and they'd bring in these pastors to come teach classes and to come speak. And I remember, like, all of them, A, were men, and almost all of them were white. So I was like, oh, okay, real pastors, right, look like this. And they were all very, like, bold and loud and certain and chiseled. And so I'm like, well, at least I got that part down. You get it? Yeah. That's right. I love that joke. So anyways, right? But the way they talked about the Bible and the way that they were just, there was never any doubt. Everything they said was with 100% certainty. And I remember watching them thinking, that's what a successful like male or a successful leader looks like. That's what a real good pastor looks like, that. And so if you're aware of the Enneagram, I'm going to be talking about that later on. I'm a 3. And that means I have the need to succeed. I'm an achiever. I'm going to win. And I looked at him saying, if that's what it looks like to win, then I'm going to play that version. Because a good Christian does these things. A good Christian is certain. A good Christian never has doubts, and they're loud. And so I took my first job in small Wisconsin, and I was killing it when I was on stage. I was. Why? Because I could play that version. I knew the rules. I knew the rules of engagement. I knew the culture. I knew what things to say. I knew what things to do, and I was rewarded for it. But here's the problem. When I'd get off the stage, I was a mess because I was not certain at all. When you're 23, what are you certain of, right? And I had questions, and I had doubts, and it was a lot harder. And these people all seemed like, it's the best thing in the whole world, and let go and let God. And I'm like, I don't know how to do that. But I kept performing, I kept playing to that version until I got my hands on this book by a guy named Mike Iaconelli. I've talked about him before. And he wrote a book called Messy Spirituality. And I read it, and I finally felt like I could breathe. And why? Because he says, hey, there is this good and beautiful God, and you're going to screw it up. And you're going to have doubts, and you're going to fail. And you're not going to be certain all the time. You'll have pockets of certainty. They're going to have probably a little more pockets of uncertainty. And God still loves you. And you still can be a great mom. And you can still thrive as an engineer. And you can still be a leader. And you can still be a great friend, even though you, in the midst of your life, could be a hot mess. And that, guys, that was so, so huge for me. It's why I use the words often here of like, God's a big fan of the real you. That's what we're talking about. Because no one ever told me that before. What I heard was, indirectly, was perform, get in line, don't raise your hand, and don't even think about asking hard questions. Why? Because good followers of Jesus don't do that. But lucky for me, that is nowhere in the Bible. Not at all. Like, when I read that book, it went from this is who I have to be before, and I read the book, it was like, I don't have to be this person, and it made me this beginning of asking this question that we should all be asking over and over and over, is this, well, then who could I be? Like, what else? Because as a 23-year-old, now as even a 37-year-old, as old, I'm not going to say your ages, as old as you are, right? There is dreams, and there is passions, and there is leadership, and there is beauty, and there is doubt, and there is certainty, and there is questions, and there is answers. There is so much in you that is waiting to come out, and it's so easy for us to say, nope, that's not how we're supposed to be. But what we see throughout Scripture, what we see, like this guy named Paul wrote a bunch of these letters, and one of them is to this town, Ephesus. He helped start this church, and he's writing them a letter to encourage them, and he says over and over and over again of how there is this awkward, beautiful, but kind of really messy body, and the body is the church. And like, who's the church? Like, who's the church? We are the people. We are the church, not the building. And he's saying this church is built up where Christ is the head. He uses this analogy of the human body a lot. And one of them in chapter 4, he says this: instead, speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become in every respect the mature body of him who is the head, that is Christ. From him, the whole body joined and held together by every supporting ligament grows and builds itself up in love as each part does its work. So the head is what drives everything, what brings life, the way I can move my fingers. You ever like thought about like, how do I make my fingers move and then you don't sleep for the rest of the night? And am I alone in that? Okay, so now no one's sleeping tonight. How do these move, right? there's so many jokes there, but I won't. But because of the central nervous system, the head, it's going to impact and drive every single thing. That's like, we want to be a Jesus-looking people. We want a Jesus-looking family, a Jesus-looking community, a Jesus-looking church, because he is the head. That is our goal. But it's made up of this body, and the body and the ligaments all have their own jobs, responsibilities, and purposes. That what the earlobe does and what the liver does are a little bit different. I'm not a doctor, but I got a feeling it's a little bit different. What my belly button is for, which I still don't know, and what my eyelashes are for, which I still don't know, all right? They have different, I'm guessing, have different responsibilities. But it's interesting. When it comes to spiritual matters, when it comes to being a part of a spiritual community, sometimes it feels like, well, no, everyone has to be an earlobe. Everyone has to believe the same exact thing. Everyone has to act and behave the same exact thing. And what Paul says is actually, it's in the complexity, it's in the diversity, it's in the messiness that actually brings out the true church. Actually what makes the church so beautiful, that I can question one thing and you can question another, and you can express your divine love to Jesus in one way and another, and it's all beautiful. And Paul does this over and over again. In 1 Corinthians, he talks on in chapter 3, this whole community of people in Corinth are having this, I don't know, battle, this discussion of, no, real followers of Jesus, the real ones, the inside knowledge, really believe Paul. And the other one's like, well, clearly you're a moron, because if you want the good stuff, right, you want it spicy, hot, right, you want to go over here to Apollos, and that's the real stuff. And they were essentially quarreling. And so Paul, in his wisdom, says this. He goes, all things are yours. And I say this all the time because I deeply believe it. Paul is saying, what you want with me and what you want with Apollos, let's just address the room. Paul is saying, all of it is yours. What you can get from Paul, when you can get Apollos, like, it is so radically available. Everything you dream, all those hungers, all those things that are inside of you and that you want to learn, you want to grow, and you want to question, you want to evolve, friends, all of it is yours. Then he goes on, whether Paul or Apollos or Cephas, now listen to this, right? Or the world, or life, or death, or present, or future, all of it is yours. And then he tells them who they are. All these things are yours. And you can find it in the past. You can find it in the future. You can be in the present, in every part of the world. All of it is available to you. And let me tell you again, friends, who you are, because you are of Christ. He is the head. And Christ is of God. So what he is throwing open to these people is, wherever you go, there is this heaven song. If you're willing to hear it, you will see it. You will hear, you'll feel the rhythm, you'll feel the beat of heaven itself, and it's all available to you. It's available through me. It's available through Apollos. It's available as you go for a walk in J. Cook. It's available for you as you make an amazing meal. It's available for you as you exercise. It's available for you as you laugh all through the night. It's everywhere you go. What a beautiful picture. Christ is the head. We are the body, and we can learn from one another. We can learn of who God is and what the divine looks like and how to worship and how to laugh, and it's going to look very different, and that's beautiful. But here's the trap. Trap is this. If there's this song of heaven being sung, we look at other people and say, well, Josh Green, like he's right over there. Hi, Josh. All right, there, he's the one waving back at me. Never wave back at me, because now everyone knows who you are. So You might look at Josh and say, well, clearly he's a very handsome, attractive man, right? He's got a good beard thing going on. And he really knows how to worship. He really knows how to worship. So people are going to learn from him. And so you're going to look at someone else and say, well, yeah, but you know, they look like they handle their money so well. So they're going to, and these people over here look like they have a great marriage. And these people like have amazing friends. And so they're going to go learn from them. And we kind of think everyone else can learn from other people. And then we discount our own song. And we think if I started or if I stopped, if you knew the real me. But it's a lie. Because when you, what Paul is saying is he's not talking about, hey, everyone else gets to play except you. He's saying, when you add your voice, it makes this rich, complex, beautiful harmony. And you have something to add to this community. You have value to add, to invest. There is questions, the way you love, the way that you create, the way that you lead, the way that you challenge. Even the way, for like the introverts in the place, right? Even the way you can just be sitting by yourself alone in the room, or quiet with someone else, can add value to another introvert. I'm not one, so I don't understand it, right? But you have something to add. You have a dream. And what we do is when we play into that lie, really what we're saying is we start playing a version of ourselves. We play a version of ourselves. And the reason we do that is saying, well, I think these things are valuable to other people, but all this other stuff, people don't want to see that. People don't want to hear that. And we do this maybe because someone in your life has said, no, real people don't have those kind of dreams. Sit down, don't raise your hand. No, you don't get the lead. No, women, they don't get the lead. No, let the men lead. They really know what they're doing. No, you're an introvert? No, you have to be exuberant. You have to be loud to be a real leader. No, creativity like that, we don't express it that way. Whatever it might be, you hear that and you carry that with you and you carry this shame with you. And so you just play this version because you don't want to what? You don't want to stand out. It's junior high all over again. When you come to a community like this, you go to a small group, you go to your friends, you say, what are we laughing at today? Okay, I'm going to laugh at that too. Okay, what are we all angry about today? Okay, I'm going to be angry about that too. What do we love today? Oh yeah, funny. I love that too today. And we play this version of ourselves. You know what happens when you play that version of yourself? It gets exhausting. Like when I was that pastor trying to play that version of someone else, I got off that stage and it's like, well, who am I? Am I only this? Am I only able to perform? Because the true you, like your true self, God didn't create you just so we can all look exactly the same. Can you imagine if we walked in here and we all just loved all the same things and we all even like believed 100% of all the same things and we all moved in the same way? We're all exactly alike. You know what you call that? A cult. Isn't it true? Right? Fall in line. We all do these. We all drink this juice. And the one guy's like, I don't know if I want to drink this juice. They're like, get out of here. You don't get to drink the juice. Right? The juice is for the juicers. Right? So thanks for laughing at that joke. That was not even that funny. But I honestly think the true self, the true you, is a rich, deep thing. And it doesn't happen by accident. Why? Because we get rewarded when we perform. We get rewarded when we don't stand out. Like taking a risk is risky. Imagine that. See, your true self, it's a muscle that you have to flex. Because there comes a point. There comes a point where you have to say, you know what? I actually do have a question about this. You know what? I'm not okay with the way you talk to me. Actually, you know what? I really want to invest my money in doing these things. You know what? I do want to go back to school. You know what? I don't want to just stay home. You know what? And you have to you actually have to engage that and lean into it before it becomes normal, before it becomes your rhythm. Which is odd to say, like the true self, you have to do on purpose. But again, I'm not that old, right? I've not been around the earth, around the sun. We go around the sun, right? I'm like, wait, get my science right. As some of you, but I've noticed, like, if I want to be true to who God made me to be, I have to do that on purpose. Now, here's not what I'm saying. I want to just, like, pause for a second. Sometimes when I talk about this, good and beautiful life, or your true identity around a table with someone, they're like, all right, Chris, so I'm just supposed to go to whatever I like? Whatever brings me joy, whatever brings me pleasure? Well, you know what brings me pleasure? If I just, like, quit my job. Man, I'm just going to play video games all day because I'm a big fan of that, right? And the true self says that he wants to play video games all day in the basement, right? Or the true self says, hey, you know what? I wouldn't mind going out and sleeping around with like 3 or 4 other people. That seems like that would be pretty good. Why not, right? So if the true self really wants that, and that's not at all what I'm saying. That's not at all what I'm saying. You still are a person of character and integrity. And part of a Jesus-looking person is still that we're going to look like Jesus. But what I am saying is this: what dreams do you have? As you look around the room, even here, like I just had a friend, I had a meeting with one of my friends and talking about asking some questions about how the way we lead and how we go about doing things. And he saw an opportunity to add value to our community. I love that. What problems do you see as you drive home from work? What problems, what opportunities do you see as you walk in this building? What opportunities do you see in your job? What opportunities do you see in your home where you say, man, if we tried, that's the real you. That's what God created. Some of you are going to be engineers. Some of you are going to, the way that you welcome people in your home, the way that you can take care of your car, the way that you can light up a room, the way you can buy gifts, the perfect gift for something, like all of that is the real you, and all of that is heaven singing through you. So we can never stop pursuing the real you. Relentlessly pursue the true you. Because again, our goal, the true you, is to be a Jesus-looking person. But what that Jesus-looking person looks like is going to be expressed in thousands of different ways. Because here's where I got stuck to. So when I was 23, read the book, Messy Spirituality, led on this transformational thing. And it still led to this place of where I ended up at Duluth Vineyard. And I was pastoring there for a couple years. And I kind of fell back in the same thing. Like when I was Chris the pastor, I was the pastor and I knew how to perform. I knew how to play the pastor and I loved it. I still love being a pastor. But then I'd go home and all of a sudden I'm like, now I'm Chris the dad. And I'm like, hey, fun loving guy, throw you around the room, right? And then I was like Chris, the incredibly attractive husband, clearly, all right? Like, hey baby, how you doing, all right? And then I went to like, now I'm Chris the friend, and now I'm Chris the better golfer than all his friends. And then I was Chris the, yeah, you got that one, right? Then I was Chris the son, then I was Chris the brother, and then I was Chris the neighbor. And it was exhausting. Because each time I felt like I had to be this version of myself to deliver to these people. I still remember being in the back of the room and we were going through some spiritual exercises. And I felt like I saw this chart of like Chris the pastor, Chris the husband, Chris the really good looking husband, all those little titles. And I felt like God like added a little bit to the paper and elevated it and said, no, Chris, who you are is you're a Chris man of God. You're a Chris who is fearfully and wonderfully made. You are Chris who is deeply, deeply loved, who happens to be a pastor, who happens to be a son, who happens to be a father, who happens to be a husband, who happens to be the best golfer of all your friends, who happens to be all those things. Because in that moment, guys, it all changed for me. Because then I could have days, like I imagine a lot of you here, like I love being your pastor. I love my work. I love my job. I love this community. I love being able to do this. And I've probably hurt some of you. I know I have. I've probably offended some of you. I probably overpromised and underdelivered at times to some of you. There's probably been times where you're like, man, I wish we would have, like, I'm going to screw it up. But doesn't move the needle that I'm fearfully and wonderfully made, and I am deeply loved, and I'm a man of God. and moving into the true self of saying, if I don't perform to my kids, I will disappoint them. If I don't perform for my wife, then I disappoint. And if I can't be the perfect son, or I might lose a game at golf once every 5 years, if I do something like that, right? Before, it was that I have less value. I'm not as important. I'm down here. And what I feel like God is inviting me to say is like, Chris, you are so deeply loved. Walk in confidence. Walk in security if you stand out. And all of a sudden, I felt like, now I'm Chris Sutter, not just deeply loved, who happens to be a pastor. I'm Chris Sutter, who loves wearing, not today, bright clothes. There was moments in my life where I looked around the room, and my dad wore pink all the time, and I loved it. And when you're in junior high, you're like, oh, Dad, please don't wear the pink today, right? But I learned, I love wearing bright clothes. I'm Chris, who's deeply loved by God, who happens to love jazz. And I love working out. I work out with my friend Brian, and we work on his garage. I realized that when I'm in pain, I laugh. I just start giggling. I'm like lifting. I'm like, oh, this is so hard. Right? I love that. I love trying hard things. I love having my mind blown by reading a great book. I love going on walks with my kids. All of a sudden, the whole idea of all this is yours was a reality instead of just a cool little word. When you walk in your true self, the things that you love and the things that make you beautiful, the things that add value, not just to your life, but all those around you, no longer do you have to apologize for them. You don't have to apologize for writing great poetry. You don't have to apologize that you like these kind of shows. You don't have to apologize that you have deep questions. You don't have to apologize that you're uncertain about things. It opens everything available to you. I have a friend, and she's also my coach. Her name's Jen Birch. And she says, yeah, you can throw it up there, right? She tells me this often, Chris, let your freak flag fly. You have to let it fly, Chris. And coaching, I'm like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I should. And she's like, whoa. Does that go against like what you really believe and who you think the divine is? I'm like, no, not at all. She goes, well, start putting that flag up, Chris, and let it flap in the wind. Say, hello, world, here I am. Because it sounds funny, but that visual helps me. Because you can stand out, and you should stand out at times, because you are worth it. And those dreams and those passions need to be heard. They need to be heard. Why? Because it's heaven coming out of you. So let me give you, this is where I end, let me give you four tips of how you can like begin to like let that freak flag fly, like putting it up the pole. How do you actually move it up? Here's number one. First thing you have to do is you need to notice. Right? I get that right? First one is that you need to notice, yeah. What really brings you life? Still, I just want to be clear, like still in a Jesus-looking life where you're adding value to other people and you're loving the divine, right? All that. What brings you life? Where do you feel like your batteries get charged? Where do you feel energized? What fills your life with pleasure? Like for some of you, it might be taking a nap and you're like, well, no. You don't take naps. Why? Weak people take naps. Huh, okay. I remember one guy telling me we were doing some spiritual exercises and he was like, so you can go read your Bible, you can go pray, you can go for a walk, or you can nap. I'm like, well, hold on. Can you go back to the nap part? Like, how is napping a spiritual exercise? He's like, are you taking care of yourself? I'm like, loophole. No, right? It's not a loophole. Where do you feel so alive? It might be having a lot of, for me, I love having a ton of people, like 60 people in my house, right? I love cooking for a lot of people and laughing and trying food. I love that. My wife, she might say something different, right? That's okay. But you need to pause and see, where do you find joy? Second thing you need to do is you need to become self-aware. You need to learn. One thing that we've walked through as a Cloquet Vineyard staff is we went through something called the Enneagram. Raise your hand if you've ever heard of the Enneagram. All right, yeah, a good number of you, all right? So Enneagram is this tool, it's this resource, it's not a magic trick, it is not answer all things, but it breaks up people into personalities, into nine different things. And I'm a three, I'm the achiever, all right? And on our staff, we have eights, we have sevens, we have ones. And when I read through it, and we used the book by Richard Rohr, it's called The Enneagram, if you would like to read through it, you go through these series of questions. And when I started reading what a three does, it was like, felt like someone was like reading my journal. And I don't even have a journal, right? It's like, oh, you love these things, and you are highly competitive, and the way that you dress and your appearance deeply matters to you. And I'm like looking, like, is someone like watching me right now? It's how I felt. But it shows the things that you love, but also shows the lies that you believe. And that was hard. They call it the shadow self, your true self and the shadow self. And if you're unhealthy, these are the things you're going to go to numb yourself. These are the things you're going to go to get life. These are the things that will destroy you. And it was like, ooh. And so then if you learn, then I can actually see, if I'm going to these things, that means that's unhealthy. I want to grow. I want to evolve. I want to change. I took Strength Finders. There's so many resources out there. Just pick one. And if you'd like to sit down and talk and navigate through that together, I'd love to be at that table with you. So we need to notice, we need to learn, and then we need to pray. This is something that sometimes we just skip through. We're like, we have all the education. We have all the information, right? I have all these feelings. We need to pray. And say, God, will you reveal yourself to me? I want to know my true self. It might be fuzzy. It might be hazy. God, Holy Spirit, God's presence, will you come and reveal to me? Praying makes a difference. And praying might look different. Again, if we're all in these different places and we're all in these different parties, praying. I remember someone telling me, well, you need to wake up at 5 a.m. and you need to pray for 2 hours. I'm like, that's never going to happen. I will lie to you and say, yes, that's a great idea, right? Because I would just fall asleep all the time. So I've learned when I pray is at different times. So like, don't shame yourself of how you pray or how you connect with God. So pray. And the last one, and I love this one, is that we need to celebrate it. When you see the true self come out of someone, celebrate it. Go crazy. Carry confetti in your pocket at all times, right? I'm not serious with the confusion. I'm serious with that sometimes we can see, like, your teenage kid takes a risk and says, actually, Dad, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. Or you see them take a risk at trying to do their homework, or someone takes a risk at work of trying a new procedure. Someone comes out and reveals, like, hey, you know what? I actually really love haikus. I'm going to start writing poetry. Or I actually really love my family. We're going to take a vacation for the first time together. We're going to go get a night away, whatever it might be. When you see someone take a risk at bringing their flag begins to get a little bit higher, like, freak out. Speak it, because when we speak it, we bring life to it, we add value to it, and you say, you are worth it. I want to hear more. What else could you be? My friends, your dreams, your leadership, your songs, your creativity, your intellect, and your love are worth it. And we need it. Let's stand. So let me pray. So Jesus, I thank you that you are the head, that we can, you give us something that we're moving towards. You give us the goal. You give us the purpose. You give us the invitation saying, come, take me in. Look like me. Love like me. And I thank you that we don't all have to be exactly alike, but the way that we can love, the way that we can engage, the way that we can we can learn can be messy at times, and that's not a threat. So I pray for my friends today who are carrying shame. Pray for my friends here today. Pray for my friends today that what they hear is, I'm just a mom. I'm just a teacher. I'm just a single person. I'm just a friend that has a truck that everyone calls me to move. I'm just fill in the blank. Holy Spirit, you come. I pray you'd fill that blank with that. You are more than a mom. You are more than an engineer. You are more than a failure. You are more than just a daughter or a son, that you are deeply loved, that you are fearfully and wonderfully made, that you are a man of God, you are a woman of God who happens to be all those things. And that we can walk in a security, we can walk in confidence that we are deeply loved. And everywhere we go, all things are ours in the world, the past, and the present, and the future. So be with us. And I pray we would continue to add value to every table we go. Amen. So I'm going to welcome up our ministry team. If you make your way forward. And there's two things that I'm going to invite you to respond to. The first one is this. The whole idea of playing a version of yourself, that's you. You feel it. You're like, I am performing. I'm trying to get acceptance. I'm trying to get validation. As a woman or as a man or as in your profession or in your marriage or even here in your spirituality. And you want to move away from that, a great place to start to move that arrow is standing with someone else and just saying it out loud. Something beautiful happens when you put it out and you expose that lie. Then you can see it for what it is. The second thing is this. Oh, yeah. Is that you're carrying a lot of shame. You're like, I should have done this. I should have done that. You don't need to carry that shame any longer. You can lean in and flex that muscle without having just to carry that guilt with you. God has something for you. If you want prayer for anything else, come on up to the front. We're going to worship for a little bit longer. Thank you for coming to Cloquet Vineyard and enjoy the rest of your weekend.